It's 11 o'clock. Jeff Blair Show with George Russick. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mr. Blair on deck with Baseball Central in an hour's time. We'll have primetime sports at 4 o'clock. In for Bob McCowan. Oh, John Gibbons, by the way, manager of the Blue Jays, will join Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle on Baseball Central at 12:15. So make sure you tune in for that. Later on in the hour, baseball of our own, Rob Nyer, MLB writer, Fox Sports, is going to join us. Chase Headley joining the Yankees in grand style. We'll discuss that ahead with Rob. Well, he's the new head coach of the Toronto Marlies, Gord Dineen, joining us on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Gord, I want to go way back in your past because I am just fascinated by this, that obviously you come from a hockey family and you go back to your time in Houston when your dad, Bill, was the GM. Gordie Howe, you spent time with Gordie Howe. I mean, your hockey got started very early on, and to be surrounded by that kind of talent, by that kind of a mentor, must have been amazing.
Oh, absolutely. When you start off that way, there's no other way to go.
My goodness.
But down, basically Mr. Hockey, when you're calling him Mr. Hockey, being able to be surrounded by the likes of him and his family and not only the great hockey player he was, but also the great person that he still is. It was real impressionable for a guy like myself and my brothers and certainly my dad's team and the young players that he had on there, to have Gordie Howe as a line mate, it was a great thing for these guys, setting them off on their careers and hopefully for us kids, my dad's kids, and to be able to strive to be somewhat like that man was a real good role model for us.
Gordon, it always interests me when your father obviously played in the NHL. And did you feel pressure because your brothers also made it to the NHL? That, man, I better get to the league because I don't want to be that one brother that didn't make it to the NHL. Did you ever feel that pressure?
I don't think there was the pressure so much from certainly wasn't coming from my dad, and there might have been a little internal, within myself, that I wanted to strive to be like him. And he was somebody that, he conducted himself a certain way, and I always wanted to be in the, follow in his footsteps. But our competition basically was, for each other, was like, it made us real competitive guys, just because we were down in places like Houston, Texas, and Denver, Colorado, and Seattle, Washington, for a good part of our younger lives, and to strive to make it to the NHL out of those markets, that was where the competition came from, and we pushed each other, and it wasn't always pretty. There was a lot of fights between us because of it, but it was definitely something that we always wanted to do.
You find yourself as a head coach now, and you had been an assistant coach with the Toronto Marlies for the past 5 years, but you go through an NHL career that was so stellar in playing 528 games. You come from a hockey family. You had that experience with Gordie Howe. You go on to play with some of the game's greatest in your era, with Trotsky, Bossy, and LaFontaine, Potvin, Ciccarelli, Lemieux, Coffey. I'm sure I'm going to leave a bunch out. But if I'm someone that has you on a staff, like if I'm a player and you're coaching me, I would grab a chair and sit next to you and be asking you question after question after question. You must have so much to share with younger hockey players today.
I like to think so. And for me, I am fortunate. I can walk down the street to the Hall of Fame there and see all these old teammates of mine sitting there, their pictures up in the Hall of Fame, and well-deservedly so. I was very fortunate in that I was drafted by the Islanders, and I learned early what it was like to, not only be in the league, but to be at the top of the league and be a part of a team that was, I was there at the end of their Stanley Cup run, and we lost in the finals my first year. But, you know, just the way those guys conducted themselves every day. And it wasn't, you know, always what you saw in games. It was what they did in practice and the professionalism that they displayed. And just the inner competition between them is there is always such a battle for ice time within those guys that, you know, every day in practice was, you know, I wouldn't say it was a war, but it was a big-time competition, and Al Arbor fostered that. And so that was something that, you know, I took from those years, and then going later on in my career, the likes of playing with Mario Lemieux and Paul Coffey, and you know, you don't even mention the guys that aren't in the Hall of Fame, but some of those guys were the guys that pushed me to be at my best, and, you know, whether it was the Sutter brothers or a Troy Loney or guys like that, and Randy Hillier in Pittsburgh. So, you know, it's something that hopefully I can pass along to my players as a coach, and hopefully they want to share in that.
Gord, I love asking this question to former NHL defensemen. Who's the toughest guy you played against? Who's the toughest guy to contain?
I'll tell you, like, playing against Mario when I was with the Islanders was definitely a challenge every day. Just with the size and strength and obviously the finesse and the hands that he displayed. But the one guy that really struck fear in me when he was just a young guy was Alexei Kovalev.
Really?
He was with the Rangers, and he was a guy that he would come down on you and put it through your feet and then flip it over top of your stick, and then he'd have you beat, but he'd want to come back and beat you again. So he was a guy that... probably pure skill. I think he might have been that one guy that I really basically backed up right on top of my goaltender so he couldn't beat me one-on-one.
With Marlies head coach Gord Dineen on the Jeff Blair Show. It's George Russick. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we talk about your hockey family and your brothers, and each of your four brothers, if I'm not mistaken, have different jobs around the NHL with various teams. That must be quite a conversation if you guys can get together. Do you ever talk to each other, maybe pick each other's brains and talk about who you would have seen and share your experiences as well?
Oh, for sure. I think that's something that, everybody in the hockey business, we exchange information, but, you know, obviously we work for different teams, so you keep certain things to yourself, but, you know, we're constantly picking each other's brains on, you know, what did you think, you know, for Kevin, per se, you know, this year with the Olympic team, what were you thinking going in that last 5 minutes, or, you know, what do you think of this type of player, or how did he react in a certain situation? And I have two of my brothers are pro scouts, and my youngest brother, Jerry, is a video analyst there for the Rangers, and Kevin's obviously been in coaching. So, sometimes it gets a little bit much for our significant others there at the dinner table, the hockey talk in the middle of July. But, it's part of our lives and something we make our living in, and we're very passionate at. So, that's goes with the territory sometimes.
Gord, you mentioned your brother Kevin and coaching the women's team to that gold medal in Sochi. And how on edge were you? The entire country was during that gold medal game. How on edge were you? Or do you watch the game maybe a little differently than the average fan and you kind of understand what's going on? Or were you biting your nails like the rest of us?
I was definitely biting my nails. There's a time and a place to be... To be analytical and watch a game as a coach, but in that scenario, not only riding on the fact that Kevin was coaching the team, but you have that Canadian pride, and I was sitting home alone. We had a day off that day from the Marlies, and the kids were at school, So I was watching the game, and I was screaming like a little kid, I'll tell you, when it came down to that last 3 minutes, and, you know, to tie it and then to win in overtime was pretty special. So it was pretty neat seeing his he didn't get a gold medal from the Olympics, but they made a replica for him, and he's got a beautiful ring to sport, and so it was pretty neat to share that with him this summer.
Well, they made a replica for him? Was that Hockey Canada who did that?
Absolutely. It was a really classy, classy thing that they did for all the coaches. And you know, they just give the medals to the athletes, which is, you know, understandable. But, you know, as a coach, you'd like to think that you're a part of that. And you know, the fact that he was able to get that and display it. And he's had a couple of really neat situations. We live on a lake in upstate New York, and a big party boat came by the other night, and they started chanting, gold medal, and he ran down and showed this party boat had about 30 people on it, and so he showed them all the gold medal, and it was pretty neat to be able to relate that to them.
Gord, obviously you're going to surround yourself with people that you know and trust, and you've had that with Derek King, working alongside him with the Toronto Marlies, and obviously you continue to do so on the coaching staff, and you go back with Derek King in your Islander playing days. Talk about what that's like to have a friend and a former teammate like that working so closely with you.
Definitely friend first and foremost. He's been a real good friend of mine over the years, and we share a lot of the experiences, obviously, as players, and we have a lot of the same philosophies on how we think the game should be played, even though, you know, he definitely brings a more offensive mindset, which is great for me, and he covers that side of it. And I think we're going to play off each other very well, as we have the last 5 years. And he's the associate coach, and his input will be, you know, obviously we're with the success that we've had, we're going to just try and have a continuation of what Steve Spott and Dallas Aikens have put forth with our group in the last 5 years. And, you know, we'll put our own stamp on it. But, we just want to continue to have success and develop guys for the Leafs.
Former NHL defenseman and the new head coach of your Toronto Marlies, Gord Dineen, here on the Jeff Blair Show. In for Jeff Blair, that's Jeff, I'm George. Gord, you mentioned a name like Dallas Aikens and obviously Steve Spott now, both guys behind the bench in the NHL. I'm assuming that's one of your goals. How exciting is that, seeing a guy like Steve Spott and Dallas Aikens use the Toronto Marlies, not as a stepping stone, but as a learning experience to eventually maybe get that job I'm sure that you covet in the NHL? How exciting was that when you got the call from Dave Nonis that you would be the next head coach of the Toronto Marlies?
Well, it was great for me on my side of it that I was being looked upon as the head coach, and, you know, we've all paid our dues, and I think when both those guys got the call to the NHL, I was probably as excited or more excited for them, just because I know the type of people they are and the character they display, and they've both earned their stripes there as far as getting up there. And Dallas had a tough year last year, but, you know, it takes a while to put your stamp on a team, and I think their players are going to get nothing but better, and just sharing time with Dallas and you know, again, the professionalism that he displays, and the same thing with Spotter with the Leafs. I think he's really going to leave his mark on that team, and he's got a certain way of doing things, and people gravitate to him, and I think he's going to find a way to get the best out of those players too, along with Peter Horacek and obviously Randy Carlyle.
We were talking last hour with the Toronto Sun's Lance Hornby, and we had asked him about Marlies that we expect to be contributing factors to the Toronto Maple Leafs. He highlighted Carter Ashton, Peter Holland, Trevor Smith. You feel the same, that you've got a group of guys that you really feel are going to help at the NHL level sooner rather than later.
Oh, for sure. And we've been fortunate that we've seen those guys go up, and you know, they're not just bit players on the team. When they've gone in, they've made an impact, and I think they've helped the Toronto Maple Leafs get better, and so you'd like to see them get further opportunity this year, and I know they've all worked hard this summer to get that opportunity, along with some other guys that you know, might not have been up last year or gotten one or two games, but they're guys that, through the experiences they had with the Marlies and the long playoff run that we had, that they're going to be better players and certainly be a lot more confident going to a situation where they're trying to make the Leafs.
Gord, how do you have that balance? Obviously, you guys want to win and ultimately win a Calder Cup with the Toronto Marlies, but your job as well is to develop the young talent of the Marlies to eventually make an impact with the Toronto Maple Leafs. How do you do that balancing act?
Well, it is. It's a tough balancing act. I've been an AHL coach for 12 of my 14 years coaching, and it's probably one of the toughest jobs in hockey because you do have that double dynamic as far as trying to put them in a winning situation, winning atmosphere, but also putting them in situations, younger players, that they're going to make mistakes. That's why they're with us, and they're going to make mistakes, and just learning from those mistakes. So, I think different coaches handle it in different ways. I realize, and certainly haven't made a lot of mistakes myself over the years as a player, that's going to happen. But you just want to make sure they limit them and don't make the same mistakes again. And hopefully when they do that, they learn from it, and then they improve, and then that puts them in a winning situation when the team does well. So maybe the first half of the year, you're going to be a little more patient, and then as the season goes on, then hopefully these guys are eliminating them, and it helps you win those games when the dog days come in January and February.
Gord, have you gotten any advice from current head coaches, maybe Randy Carlyle, anybody else in the NHL or at the AHL level, someone that has given you advice about being a head coach?
Well, I worked with Randy back in the Anaheim days. I was the head coach in Des Moines with their American League team. Mm. And he was always very good about sharing ideas and certainly about systems, but also about developing players. He's a very structured guy, and so I think that helped me a lot as far as putting structure into the type of team I wanted. So I'm sure, between him and his staff, they'll again be very open to sharing. They have been the last few years, and we want to play the same type of brand of hockey that the Leafs play, and mirror the systems that they use. And certainly with Steve Spott there now too, and coming fresh from the Marlies, we've had it, and we'll always have good open lines of communications with their staff.
Well, you've had a few stints as head coaches in a few different places, but let's make sure this one doesn't result in the closing of a team, like the franchise doesn't go under, okay, Gord? Because that's happened before.
Well, like I said, if that happens with this team, then I'm really a jinx to the team. I put the Macon Whoopee under and the Richmond Renegades. they all ceased operations, but I hope it wasn't me, but that it seemed to follow me there for a few years.
Gord, we all know Richmond and Macon have never recovered. He's the brand new coach of the Toronto Marlies. Best of luck, Gordon. Hopefully we'll get to do this again soon.
That'd be great. Thanks for having me on. I'd love to come back.
We look forward to it. There's Marlies head coach Gord Jean. Can you believe that there was a team in the ECHL called the Macon Whoopee? The Macon.
That's an awesome
Whoopee.
Name.
That's hilarious.
It's not like that. Is it proposed? Is it going to happen? Miami Vice team that David Beckham's trying to call in Miami, which by far would be the best name in all of pro sports.
Want to see that happen. That would be
amazing.
But
the Macon Whoopee, that's not bad.
Macon Whoopee, that's hilarious. 11:19 on the Jeff Blair Show. It's George Russick. I'm Jeff Sambus.
Oh, Macon Whoopee.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You mean you liked the name of the team before you realized the joke?
No, I just...
My
I'm just
goodness.
Being, I'm just being droll.
That is a good name. Rob Nyer, Fox Sports MLB writer, joining us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Rob, thanks for joining us as we speak right now. Is Cliff Lee still in Philadelphia? Is he still a Philly?
He is. I don't think he'll be for much longer.
Because it is a small market for an impact... Front line, middle to front line pitcher, is it not?
You mean Philadelphia?
Well, anywhere on the trade market.
They have a huge amount of revenue from their TV deal. They can basically afford anybody they like. The reason that that's why he's there. The reason he won't be there much longer, quite possibly, is that by the time his contract runs out, the Phillies will still be rebuilding, quite probably. So it makes sense to do a little rebuilding right now and build up the farm system.
Do you think his value maybe is decreased just a little bit coming off that elbow issue and maybe that decreased velocity in his last start? Or it's Cliff freaking Lee and he gets it done in the playoffs and he's going to the Phillies are going to demand a king ransom and more than likely they'll get what they want?
I don't think they will. I don't think they can for two reasons. One is the injury. Maybe in his next start he comes out and just looks amazing and that takes care of that concern. That's possible. The other issue is that he's still owed an immense amount of money. So it's really going to be more of a salary dump than anything, and maybe they can pick up a pretty good prospect. But I don't think they're going to get a big haul because the expense for his next team is going to be so high.
So what's if you know about the Cliff Lee no-trade clause, does it include the Yankees, and is that because he's still angry with Yankee fans harassing his wife in the 2010 ALCS? Because that's the story that I came across earlier today.
Yeah, that could well be part of it. It's funny, one of the things that players do is that they will allow themselves to be traded to a team that can't afford them. Essentially, they're creating a larger no-trade list, if that makes sense. They're very tactical that way. So, like, these guys now, they have 20 teams they can't be traded to, not without their approval, which leaves 10, or 9, excuse me. Well, most or all of the other 9 might be teams that would never pay for them in the first place. So, essentially, it's a complete no-trade list. And really, all that means is the player... it's not that you can't trade him. It just means that he gets to approve it. And it just gives the player an immense amount of leverage, whether that means picking the team he gets traded to, essentially, or getting a little bonus when he gets traded. So I think when you see a player with a list of 20 teams that he can refuse a trade to, you know he's gaming the system.
Rob, obviously the vultures circling around the Philadelphia Phillies. We hear the name Cole Hamels attached to the Boston Red Sox and the name A.J. Burnett as well. Do you expect both of those guys to get dealt? And is Cole Hamels really going to get dealt from the Philadelphia Phillies?
I think that if the Phillies are going to keep somebody, he's the one they would keep. He's reasonably priced, still a very good pitcher, could well be around when they are ready to win again. I'm not saying they can't be. If they get blown out of the water, sure. Maybe ownership comes to down tomorrow and says, you know what, complete rebuild, trade everybody you can trade. I don't think that's going to happen. The expectations in Philadelphia are too high. So I think Hamels probably stays. Now, Burnett is a different case, obviously. He's not having a particularly good year, but he could help some clubs, and he's on a one-year contract, I believe, so there's no reason to keep him around.
Who do you expect, Rob, to be the most aggressive on the trade market? And amongst the teams that you might look at, where would the Blue Jays fit in there?
I think they're near the top of the list. I think
good.
The Blue Jays have a great shot at catching the Orioles, although being 4 games back is certainly a problem at this point in the season. It's not insurmountable. They're roughly equivalent in terms of the talent on hand. So one of those teams, or both, should be aggressive. Now, of course, if you're the Blue Jays, the problem is that you can be aggressive, but if the Orioles are also aggressive, and you don't really gain any ground, and you basically have to just outplay them the rest of the season with roughly the same talent. I think both of those teams will be aggressive. I think the A's and the Angels, neither wants to get into a one-game wild card, the one-game playoff game. All those teams you see near the top of the standings, basically, and there are a lot of them, both the Giants and the Dodgers, and also all 4 teams in the NL Central. The Reds are now 4.5 back, but they might be the most talented team there. The other 3 teams at the top are within 2.5 games of each other, and I think all 4 of them have to be aggressive.
Fox Sports' Rob Nyer here on the Jeff Blair Show. In for Jeff Blair, that's Jeff. I'm George. Rob, we heard the story here in Toronto that maybe ownership doesn't want to pony up the money or take a lot of money back. Have you heard any of that sort down south? And is that the talk around baseball that the Blue Jays don't want to add salary?
I haven't. And frankly, it surprises me a little bit after the debacle of 2013. I just sort of looked at that from a situation from afar and figured they have to go for it after what happened last year.
Well, be it the Blue Jays or any other team around Major League Baseball, you know, given the extension of teams that can make the playoffs, it still feels like there's a lot of teams in contention, thus making it more believable that trades could happen a little bit more frequently after the non-waiver trade deadline of July 31st, that we'll expect to see more deals in August. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we'll see a number. I mean, we get caught up in the terminology and talk about the trade deadline, but of course it's just one trade deadline, and there's another at the end of August. So it wouldn't at all surprise me if, you know, a few of these teams will fall back in August and decide to start thinking about next year. And so there will be some waiver deals. I don't know if there will be any or many big names traded in August, but there will be certainly a lot of bench players and relief pitchers changing hands.
Rob, one of the bigger names we were talking about, probably seemingly for months and months and months, is Chase Headley of the Padres, goes from San Diego to the Yankees, and that's a player a lot of Blue Jay fans were interested in. Did the Yankees do well in that deal, and is just a change of scenery exactly what Chase Headley needs?
I think the Yankees did as well as they could possibly have done, at least in terms of picking up a third baseman. You know, Todd Frazier, the Reds' third baseman, was an all-star a couple weeks ago, or last week. If you just look at the projections for the rest of this season, based on history, Chase Headley will be just as good as Todd Frazier the rest of the way. Now, you have to factor injuries into that, and who knows if Headley is completely healthy, et cetera, et cetera. But my point is, Chase Headley has proved over the years that he's a pretty good baseball player. Even good players can have a few rough months, which he certainly has had this season. But if he is even close to what we expect of him purely based on the statistics, he's a huge upgrade for the Yankees, who have gotten zero production from their third baseman this season. It's been a disaster. You know, they've had a number of sore spots, but that's been maybe the biggest, aside from, you know, all the pitching injuries. So sure, I mean, the Yankees did about as well as they could have done in terms of improving at third base. They have more work to do, but I think you have to like that move.
The price that the Yankees paid for Headley in Solarte in DePaula, it did not strike me as overwhelming. Were you surprised by the price that the Yankees did pay for Headley?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that the Padres just wanted to dump some salary. Headley's a free agent after this season. They weren't going to pay him, most likely. And the guys that the Padres got are both sort of middling prospects at this point. They have a chance to be decent major leaguers. They won't be stars, but they could be useful players, and that's probably about as well as they could have done.
Very quickly about the Padres as well, Rob. They're making some important, surprising moves, given the fact they don't have a GM right now.
Yeah, they've been pretty aggressive. you know, I think it's a matter of, I suspect that their co-GMs were chosen because they get along well together and have a mandate to make some moves and start the rebuilding process. It's funny, you know, you look at that National League West, and there are three teams that either will or should be tearing everything down and starting over. The Diamondbacks, the Padres, and the Rockies all are complete messes. So three-fifths of that division, basically, which leaves the way wide open for the Giants and the Dodgers.
MLB writer for Fox Sports, Rob Nyer. Rob, thanks for doing this. Enjoy the next 10 days or so with all this hot stove talk.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
About 11 minutes ago, Ken Rosenthal with this tweet saying the Blue Jays again focused on pitching, starting, or relief. Believe Lind, Encarnacion, Reimold could be back next week. Lori in 2 weeks. So now we have some timelines to go on as far as when the walking wounded will come back. Interesting that the Blue Jays are willing to stay the course with what they have and focusing on pitching instead, once again. A strong focus on starting pitching and relief pitching.
Well, and we've only been talking about that since last season, that the Blue Jays are going to upgrade their starting rotation. And is that really that surprising, though? You definitely want to beef up the starting rotation. A lot of question marks Drew Hutchinson, we saw him struggle mightily as well. Is he running out of gas? What can you really get out of R.A. Dickey right now? Mark Burley's kind of struggled of late, but he's always an innings eater. Marcus Stroman's your best pitcher right now. Jay Happ and Marcus Stroman are the Blue Jays' best pitchers right now.
Well, with Burley and Hutchinson, talk of them being a little tired at this point.
I don't see it with Burley. It is what it is with Mark Burley.
I don't know. Talk of that. That had me thinking, okay, maybe they need to do something with this rotation. Like, this will not stick the rest of the year. Maybe when Brandon Morrow comes back, you're going to get help there. But again, you can't bank on that.
No.
You can't bank on that at all. So, interesting. So we'll see what comes out of that. And certainly we'll hear more about that on Baseball Central. Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle will have that in 45 minutes time. Blue Jays manager John Gibbons will be a guest of theirs.
Or they can get more out of their 39-year-old knuckleballer who, has a trick pitch and won a Cy Young Award, and he was brought in here to be a stud starter for them.
He's on the mound tonight.
About 9-12 this season when R.A. Dickey starts for the Toronto Blue Jays. Super stat?
Yes. That's not his record, but when the Blue Jays...
That's right, not his record, but when R.A. Dickey goes to the mound, the Blue Jays are 9-12 on the season.
To be fair, only two of their starters right now
have taken to the mound. I said the Blue Jays are 9-12 when R.A. Dickey starts a game for them.
To be fair, only two starters on this club have the team has a winning record with only two starters on this club.
Hey, you want a super stat? The Blue Jays are 9-12 when R.A. Dickey starts.
Yeah, heard you the first two times. The Canadian Open gets going
He's
tomorrow.
He's an ace, all right. He's an ace.
Canadian Open gets started tomorrow, and Scott Simmons is CEO of Golf Canada. He's going to join us as we continue the Jeff Blair Show with George Russick. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's 11:40 with George Russick. I'm Jeff Sambit, the home stretch of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Scott Simmons is the CEO of Golf Canada, and he joins us now. Scott, you all set for the Canadian Open tomorrow?
Yeah, things look great here, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. It's always exciting to be back in Montreal, especially at the historic Royal Montreal Golf Club. So we're really excited about the first tee shot being hit tomorrow.
Scott, obviously you know this question was coming, and having a tournament or a national championship a week after the Open Championship, clearly not all the guys you want there, although the field looks pretty impressive. Scott, when can we finally get this rectified as well? When you look back to 2000, when Tiger hit that shot on 18 at Glen Abbey, one of the most famous golf shots in the last 25 years, and it happened at the Canadian Open in September. When can we finally get this rectified, Scott?
Well, it's an ongoing discussion with the PGA Tour. It's not as easy as one would think now with the FedEx playoffs. You know, those are four new events that didn't exist 6 or 7 years ago that really run through the end of August and September. Our old date, as you know, is in September. That being said, I think the work that we've done with our partners from RBC, even being the week after the Open Championship, has been fantastic. I had the privilege of being over there this year at the Open and came back on the charter with the guys. And, to come back and be able to have guys in the field like, Furyk and Snedeker and Schwartzel and McDowell and Mahan and so on. I mean, you got 156 world-class players here. We'd obviously love to have Tiger or Phil or Rory here, but that doesn't diminish from the event in any way in my mind. This is our Open. This is Canada's Open. We've got close to 20 Canadians in the field. We've got some great world-class players that have won majors, and we're just really excited about the guys that are here and not worried about the guys that aren't.
Well, does it come with a cost as far as changing dates is concerned on the schedule?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a complicated answer, but The short answer is that, yes, if we move from the date we're in now, the cost of the event would rise for us. And, you know, you're not necessarily guaranteed a different field anyway. You know, in today's professional golf climate, when the top players in the world are planning their schedule, they start with the four majors, the four World Golf Championship events, the four FedEx playoff events, the Players Championship, perhaps an event in their hometown or a couple that they go in overseas. And just in today's world in 2014, you know, these elite players are playing 15 to 20 events, and that's it. And, you know, I'm actually thrilled with the fields that we've had at the Open. Everybody always talks about Tiger, and sure, he hasn't been around since 2001, but we've had some great champions here. We had Sneds last year, and, you know, we'll have another great champion hoisting the trophy this Sunday.
Scott, has there ever been talk to moving the event maybe in the springtime? Scott?
Well, we'll get Scott Simmons, CEO of Golf Canada, back on the line. Obviously, there's a phone issue. I hope it's just a phone issue. Scott will rejoin us in a moment. What do you think of Canadians' chances in this is concerned? 60-year drought of a Canadian winning the Canadian Open. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Golf Canada CEO Scott Simmons back on the line. Scott, we lost you there for a split second. I was just asking before your phone cut out that what are the chances of maybe just moving this event entirely to the spring or early summer? Has that ever been discussed?
Yeah, I mean, again, as I said earlier, we've had ongoing discussions with the tour about different options. I can tell you that our partners, RBC, are quite happy with where we are now, very happy with the field that we have. But, of course, it's incumbent on us to always look at different options. With our climate, of course, you know, you really can't hold our National Open until, you know, roughly after the U.S. Open. And then you can't have it any later than, I would say, the PGA Championship, because that's followed by the playoffs, and then you're into late September, and that just wouldn't be an ideal date for the Open either. So you're looking at basically a couple of other weeks in the June-July period, and I'm not sure how much my comments before were heard before I got cut off, but those dates aren't necessarily much more ideal than the one we're in now. I was talking about the way players plan their schedules, that you've got the four majors, the four World Golf Championships events, the four FedEx playoff events, the Players Championship, perhaps a few personal favorites from their hometown, a few overseas, and that's their schedule.
Scott, I kind of equal it to when we see the tennis in this country as well, the Rogers Cup, that the ATP and the WTA scheduling the event pretty much simultaneously at the same time. And I think tennis fans in this country get robbed. Instead of seeing 2 weeks of great tennis, they only see one. And I think golf fans get it. It's a disservice to golf fans in this country that this event has to happen right after the Open Championship. And I keep harping on the same point, but what would be the ideal date for you? And I understand you're saying you're having great fields and the event's been a great success, but what would be the ideal date for you? If the PGA Tour came to you and said, Scott, what date would you want to have the Canadian Open that we can get all the big names back into this country to show it the event what it should be, our national championship? What would that date be to you?
Well, I don't think there's any perfect date, but I would say a date in June or July that isn't either preceded or followed by a major championship or a World Golf Championship event. You could look at the first week of July, but you know, that also has its challenges because a lot of players take off the July 4th week in the United States. And I hear you guys. I mean, it's trust me, I'm a Canadian golf fan as well, and I want the best field possible at the Open. But I think people have to recognize that, you know, we need to be proud of this Open. It's the third oldest in the world since 1904, and there's a lot of events. There was the Scottish Open before the Open Championship that the Scots are extremely proud of and should be. The Australian Open, there's many Open championships around the world that, you know, don't have the top 10 players in terms of ranking in the world there. It's the climate now in this day and age. You've got the majors, you've got the World Golf Championships events, and then you have other world-class events, and there's only so many players and so many weeks. And, you know, I think the more we develop our own players in this country, you talked about Eugenie Bouchard, and I was glued to the TV, and I'm not even a tennis player.
Right.
because I wanted to watch a Canadian be successful. And, I think the work we're doing to develop more young Canadian talent in this country is going extremely well. You're seeing the results now at the PGA Tour Canada, the web.com level, the LPGA, the Symetra Tour. And I think with all due respect to some of the world's best golfers that aren't here, if we had another Mike Weir moment where he won the Masters in 03, if we had a Canadian win the RBC Canadian Open this week, nobody would care about who's not here. We'd be celebrating the fact that we've got another Canadian hero. So that's where my focus is creating more Canadian heroes.
Well, and we might very well see that. And hopefully we do out of Graeme Dillette, 38th rank at this point. Hearn, Weir, Hadwin, Sloan. There's a lot of Canadian representation this weekend.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm repeating what I said a moment ago, but I'd be much more, I'd be so enthused to have more homegrown world-class players than relying on people that, you know, were born outside our borders. I want to focus on what's happening inside this country, continue to grow some great Canadian talent that we can all rally around like we do when the Olympics are on, and having that flag on your sleeve is something that we're all very proud of, and I think there's a very good chance that we'll have a number of Canadians in contention come Sunday this weekend.
Scott, how great is it to see Mike Weir back and competitive?
It's absolutely outstanding. I've had the privilege of knowing Mike for a long time, and you know, we had a good chat yesterday. We had a brief presentation about the Olympic Games and how that's going to work for Canadians who would qualify for the team. And he looks great. He's in top physical condition. He feels good. It's really nice. And we all know he had a second place finish earlier this year. I mean, if he retired today, the guy's had a Hall of Fame career. But, you know, he's still relatively young at, I think, 44, if I'm not mistaken, or 42. And I think he's got a lot of golf left ahead of him. The way these guys keep themselves in shape these days, you know, guys can win into their 50s. So he's got a lot of golf ahead of him, and I'm really thrilled for him that he's back at the top of his game.
Looking forward to a great weekend in Montreal with the Canadian Open. Scott Simmons, CEO of Golf Canada. Scott, thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Guys, my pleasure. Anytime.
All right. And looking forward to it. A lot of Canadian representation. And could this finally... 60-year drought.
Yeah.
60-year drought, George. It's way too long. In our own backyard. Can't happen. It's got to stop. Maybe this will be the year.
And again, it's just frustrating to me that all the big time players aren't here. And I understand Scott does
not
the
all,
positive
but some.
Spin.
Yeah.
Does the positive spin on the event, and like he should, but it would be fantastic to see the big boys here playing. And how sweeter would it be if a guy like, you know, David Hearn wins the Canadian Open with Tiger, Rory, and Phil in the field as well. It's just a disservice to the Canadian golf fans in this country. Ditto with what I mentioned about the tennis, how the scheduling works, that I think tennis fans in this country, instead of getting 2 weeks like they should of great tennis, and maybe the men and women take away from one another, it should be like that for the Canadian Open. This should be in a spot where it can be showcased and the world's best players come to our national championship. Hopefully down the road the scheduling changes, because Jeff, that shot that Tiger hit at Glen Abbey, that was one of the greatest shots ever, and people still talk about that shot to this day, and that's over 14 years ago almost.
And maybe a little less so given where it was. I hope that's not the case, but...
Right.
Yeah. Maybe it'll change down the road. Thanks to you for listening, calling, texting, tweeting. Not to that guy that emailed. Follow us on Twitter, at RussicSN590, at Jeff Sammet 590. We're back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. with another edition of the Jeff Blair Show. Jeff is on deck with Joe Siddle for Baseball Central next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and a happy 53rd birthday, Woody Harrelson.